This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
WEEI Afternoons. That was the voice of Mike Giardi joining us a little bit earlier talking NFL draft. Good time to tell you that the draft coverage on WEEI is brought to you by McFarland Energy. Upgrade your air conditioning system before the summer rush. Visit McFarlandEnergy.com. By Northeast Men's Health, the leader in men's sexual health. Get your sex life back on track. NortheastMen'sHealth.com. And by Lucky Energy, the number one energy drink in Massachusetts, among hosts of this show, at least. So we're here at Fenway Park, Ted, but we're talking a little football. We're talking a little draft. And I actually want to get to some other audio that you're very excited about.
Well,
Stiz, you have some audio back there, I think, with Tom Curran.
Really, I think one of the questions is who's in charge?
Yes.
Who's in charge? That's a big question. Who's in charge? So people want to know, is this Elliot Wolf or is this Mike Vrabel's team? Who's got the final say? I don't, there's a little gray area in what Tom Curran thinks. He's not really sure. Let's listen to what he has to say about this topic. Go ahead, Stiz.
I don't think I've seen anything that he's done, whether it be in Cleveland, whether it be here as a guy in the back seat pointing out to Bill what to do. They've been a disaster. The Patriots personnel department has been a disaster. Cleveland was a disaster when he was there. There's absolutely nothing to recommend Elliot Wolf as somebody who can identify talent. At the highest levels, never mind free agency. So to me, I have zero confidence in his ability to identify talent.
Actually, he was pretty clear on that. Now I think about it.
Ouch, man. Babe. Felt personal.
Is Elliot going to be invited into the room draft night? Is he going to be?
Is he going to be invited in the building?
Does his card work to the stadium? I mean, those are strong comments from Tom. And you know what? And it's been consistent.
Absolutely.
Season. You just wonder, what do other higher-ups in the building feel the same way Tom does? Because it would lead me to believe that.
So we know Tom Curran is tied in, connected, has good sources.
Oh, yeah.
And I do this a lot with Mike Reese, Tom Curran. Guys that I trust have sources. I wonder, is this their opinion or is this a very well-educated opinion? Did they get some information? The one thing I would push back on just slightly if I want to play devil's advocate, he did draft two quarterbacks last year that won games as rookies.
Yeah, and one of them he actually made a choice on.
The rest of the draft I'm choosing to ignore.
Drake May, he kind of just, that was a bit of a BPA, but.
Sure.
Yeah, right. So to give him credit for Drake May, that was the obvious choice.
But I'll give him Milton credit. That's fair.
You took a guy that no one else wanted for five more rounds, and he went out there, and he won a game that screwed the organization.
Hey, he's just following dad's game plan. You know.
Absolutely.
That's what his dad would have done. So I don't know. Hey, do we give him credit for that? I mean, I don't know. But
I tell you, Tom's not.
Yeah.
Tom's not giving him credit for anything.
I mean, look, you know what? As players, what I always like to know is who put the stamp on the player, because there are people behind the scenes. Some people are for this guy. Some people are for the other guy.
Right.
And I always wanted to know when I got drafted, who was the one pounding the table for Ted Johnson? And, you know, I found out, Charlie Army was that, Al Groh. I'm curious, the voices in the behind the scenes, whoever they draft in this year's draft, Who was pounding the table for each of these players? I'll be curious to hear that. We'll never probably ever find out. Sometimes it comes out, but most times it doesn't.
And your guy, Mike Vrabel, has been talking multiple times here about what he finds interesting is when the coaches are pounding the table for a certain player and then the scouts are pounding the table for a different player and how that melds together. And the thing I was wondering there is, Mike Vrabel, we think, is making the decision, right?
Yeah, you know
it. Is he a coach or is he a scout?
He'll consider himself both.
Yeah.
I mean, he'll consider himself a talent evaluator.
Yeah.
I mean, he's been watching football tape his whole life, Daniel. So he knows what he's looking for. I would rather the coaches be honest. You know, the scouts just give me the information, give me the data, and then let the coaches decipher the data and watch the film and decide ultimately who gets picked. That would be how I would run it.
All offseason, we've asked the same question about who really is in charge, because you have Vrabel, who comes in, who seems like he's anointed into the Bill Belichick position that you know very well, of not only coaching the team but making the football operations decision.
Yep.
It's never been outwardly confirmed that he's that guy, and the one thing that's standing in Vrabel's way of being the football czar that Tom Curran was asking for is the one holdover, the one main holdover in Elliott Wolf.
And Matt Groh, so we forget him.
But. Yes, we do. So, I can lump Groh into this, but this feels to me like laying the groundwork if you have a 6 or 7 win season and maybe you do all right, but you're still not a playoff team. It feels like it's laying the groundwork to me for Mike Vrabel to take over and run the entire show ahead of the 2026 season. Well, that's what I get from this.
I part of it is what happened last year when it was a collaboration.
Right.
It failed so epically.
Yeah.
That really was favored Mike Vrabel in a lot of ways. He probably knew that he had leverage. He had other teams wanted him. The Patriots really only wanted Mike Vrabel. So he leaned in probably hard on getting certain things in writing that gave him more power than you maybe would think a first time, not head coach, but a first time head coach for this franchise getting, if you know what I'm saying.
But is that a good thing given his history in Tennessee?
Yes, absolutely. Because I don't know how much power he had in Tennessee.
So that vagary helps him there.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
He's going to have the puppet that he will be the puppeteer of. What's the first thing they did after they hired him? Brought in Ryan Cowden.
Yep.
There's your football executive that will wear some kind of hat that will execute whatever Mike Vrabel wants.
Yeah, and right, we're not going to have issues week 8 when this team starts off, I don't know, 2-6 and go, who do we blame, right?
Yeah.
Those days are done.
Do you blame the Patriots Hall of Famer, or do you blame the one holdover from the regime that just created one of the worst rosters that we've seen in a very long time?
Well, I do think you have a ready-made scapegoat if you're Mike Vrabel. If the draft goes well, Vrabel's new regime and tenure is off to a great start. And if it doesn't go well, well, we should probably get rid of the guys who've been not doing very well for 3 or 4 years with Belichick, with Mayo, with me. Maybe it's them. We get rid of them. We'll be okay.
Which is why that clip that we played does feel a little bit like slightly informed. Just put this out there and get the narrative out there a little bit.
And my guess is probably coaches to some degree want some vagueness, some ambiguity.
Sure.
So no one really knows who to point and fire at.
Yep.
Because it could be multiple people. And so they probably like it that way. So you can't just focus in on one person.
And we're always going to have some question. You said it. We like the classic example was Mac Jones, right? The Mac Jones. Mac Jones was the video one, right? Where Bill said, yep, like, hey, Matt, you okay? And Matt, you good? Like, he was like polling the room like it was a
so group. Passive aggressive.
Absolutely.
So passive aggressive.
But like, that was a show he was putting on.
Yeah.
But there was a reason behind that. And that's a separate issue for a separate day. But we're always going to have a little bit of a, you wanted to know, right? As a player, you wanted to know who pounded the table for you.
Yeah.
So you, like, even in the building, you kind of had to wait till you found out about your own self.
So Mac Jones gets here, he sees that video, and he's like, okay, great, the head coach doesn't really even want
right.
Me. It's just
some guy named Matt okayed it.
Yeah, the owner forced my head coach to draft me. Great.
So, Ted, there's one other thing we need to get to here. So Ashton Jeanty is Fitzy's pick at one of the days where he had a pick, and it was
he actually
yesterday.
Strung them together 2 days
okay.
in a row. He spun the draft wheel, and Ashton Jeanty came up twice in a row.
And we're at this point in the year. I don't know if you guys saw this on social media last night. 5'8" Ashton Jeanty was dunking a basketball, making the rounds on social media.
Looked like you.
Yeah, if I could dunk.
Yeah, looked
like me if I could dunk.
You don't have to laugh that hard. What are you laughing at?
Oh, no, I just, the muscles on that guy.
I could grab rim in high school.
You have some little muscles, little Mighty Mouse
I
muscles.
I think I'd be little.
Get out of here. You could grab rim in high school.
What are you laughing at out there? People on the sidewalk laughing at me now.
You could touch the rim, though?
Oh, yeah, I could dunk a marble.
Okay.
I could dunk something.
I can believe that.
I had ups back then. Anyway, this is about Ashton Jeanty, not me. Ashton Jeanty is a popular talking point because some people now are saying, is he the best player in the draft? Is he the, like, and you need offensive weapons, and he's a true weapon. He had the whole letter, draft the guy that no one can tackle kind of. Listen, you went to Boise State. Let's not pretend you did it at Alabama and won a national title.
You weren't playing against people that could tackle you.
Fitzy's all over the map. Where are you on Ashton Jeanty?
I'm out on him.
Totally?
Get me. Yeah. No, well, I'm saying if I want Tyler Warren over him.
Okay.
I want Will Campbell over him. Right. I want Javon Walker over him. And part of it is, you know, it's kind of laid out for you. You know, some of the highest picks, right, running backs in recent history. If you look at the most recent highest pick, Bijan Robinson, 2023. He's got 3,300 yards so far and 23 touchdowns, but the Falcons haven't made the playoffs. Saquon Barkley did nothing with the Giants, and he was the second overall pick until he goes to the Eagles, and then we saw what happened. Leonard Fournette was the fourth overall pick. He was released after three seasons with the Jaguars. Christian McCaffrey, a eighth overall pick for the Panthers, he lost two seasons to injury and only made the playoffs once in 6 years. Ezekiel Elliott, six productive seasons, but never did much in the playoffs. So on and on and on. Todd Gurley, same thing. Trent Richardson, we know how that worked out. C.J. Spiller. So all of these really big name running backs that have gone high in the draft. You see what their success was with their teams, pretty much nada. Mm-hmm. And so I think Tyler Warren is a more impactful offensive player for this quarterback, this team, this offense than Ashton Jeanty would be, Dan.
A running back more times than not is something that I kind of look at as an accessory pick. If you're a team that's ready to win, let's add a dynamic running back to our offense, and that adds another element to a team that we already knew was going to be good. Prime example being the Giants. The Giants took a running back despite having nothing on their offensive substance, and there are a lot of guys that you mentioned that were in that same situation, and then funny enough, they get moved to a team that's ready to win, and all of a sudden these guys have better offensive lines, they're in better offenses, and now they're having these career seasons. So I don't find the Patriots in a situation where their offense is good enough yet. Give it a year or two, add to the offensive line, maybe find another wide receiver, fine. But it seems like too much of a shoehorning pick to put a running back
in. And Andy, you even look at Christian McCaffrey, did nothing. You didn't hear about Christian McCaffrey in Carolina. He goes to the 49ers, all of a sudden they're competing for Super Bowls.
So let me just
great offensive line
throw something else out there.
Yeah.
Because we are comparing Vrabel and Tennessee.
We are.
And people were, when he first arrived, somebody asked him about, like, well, you ran the ball all the time. He's like, well, my best player was a running back, Derrick Henry.
Mm-hmm.
Does that play into your thought process? Could he be seeking his Derrick Henry where he could just be the bell cow guy who I'm going to give the ball to 300 times?
I got an answer for that.
You guys are pointing at each other. Yeah. Why don't you talk?
Well, I want Dan to get his words in today. I who was the quarterback for Tennessee when Derrick Henry was the running back?
Ryan Tannehill, right?
Ryan Tannehill.
Ooh, please.
Not a great quarterback.
Compared to what I look, Drake May, I get it. He's only won one game. There's a lot of people that are unsure about Drake May. They're not really convinced, which is still shocking, but that's okay. They're fans, you know, they go by wins and losses. I watched Drake May play, guys, and I think he's special. I think he's a special player. I don't think Ryan Tannehill can touch the abilities that Drake May has. And so I think it's going to be a different deal here. So you can't really compare the two, in my opinion, because I don't think the quarterbacks are even comparable.
I would also just, you know, the physicals of the two guys, Derrick Henry is built like you.
Yeah.
He's a true mountain of a workhorse running back.
Yeah.
Jeanty's great, but he's 5'8", 211. He's not really that. And I would also say Derrick Henry's one of the great outliers in NFL history. The way he's been after year after year after year, and even he kind of fell into a nice spot in
Leonard Fournette was a transformational whatever player. Like I think he was in the same draft as Jadeveon Clowney. They were like, people thought they could go from high school to the pros
instead
of in missed college. And we saw how his career turned out, you know? So it's they don't have longevity, and it's I don't think it's worth reaching for a running back at that spot.
Yeah, I kind of agree. Like, there's the talk radio sexy side of it, me, that wants to say, that'd be fun. Running back that you think could win Rookie of the Year, and he and Drake May, oh my God, we got these young gun weapons. But getting back to, I'm trying to build a football team, I'm trying to be good long term, is there a high likelihood if you take Genty at four that he makes you... Because I loved Bijan Robinson more than anybody.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And he's a good player. And what are the Falcons?
You're just not a in a position
in a bad division. Not making the playoffs.
You're just you're just not in a position yet with your roster to make a pick that is construed as risky.
And
that's a risky pick.
Yeah. Jahmyr Gibbs goes to the Lions, the team that is invested heavily in the offensive line and has built the other stuff
receivers, past tense,
quarterback, everything's built.
Right.
Now he can play his role, and you're like, ooh, that guy's a fun playmaker. Yeah, that's great. What'd you call it? Complimentary piece earlier?
Yeah, or accessory. Same deal.
Jahmyr Gibbs is an accessory who fits perfectly for the Lions.
No doubt.
You put Jahmyr Gibbs on the Patriots, and we're saying, what a wasted pick that was.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So that's where you are with Ashton Genty. He'd be a fun pick, and I think we'll all love to watch him. You might want to pick him on your fantasy team if he ends up on a team that has a good offensive line, whatever, but probably not here.
Do we think they're going to go back to the third down back? You know, you have a first and second down back, and then you have the traditional, like, that was Josh's favorite formula for a long time.
Oh, yeah. And the list of the, and not just Josh, it started with Charlie and worked its way up a little bit.
Right.
The scheme and the system.
Right.
And then it fell out of favor or didn't work. And you actually had a couple of years ago, Stevenson kind of did both. He caught 68 passes, I think, led the team in receptions. Might have been why he got worn down and doesn't have a lot of tread left on the tire now.
You have to try to baby-proof Ramondre Stevenson as much as possible. So I think even if that's the reason you bring a guy in.
So maybe James White, who's announcing a pick in the fourth round? Middle of the draft. James White, former, is announcing one of their picks.
Oh, okay.
Wouldn't it be convenient if he announced a speedy, pass-catching third down back?
I would love that. I would love that. Because we got our first and second down backs already.
Yeah.
We don't need our first... We need give me a third down back that can pick up blitzes and get open in the flat or beat a middle linebacker in man to man on third and, you know, seven all day in that third, fourth round kind of spot right there. I would love a guy like that on his team.
Before we wrap this segment up, I'm intrigued. I'm going to go to the phone lines. Jim in Mansfield, it just says John Kraft. So what are your thoughts on John Kraft, Jim?
Yeah, listen, Jim? I think you guys discount. Hi, are you there?
I'm there.
Okay. I think you guys discount the Kraft's business sense in the way they built their empire as being businessmen. And Jonathan Kraft has been in the Patriots, the football business now, since coming out of the womb, basically. And he, I think, has learned how to run a football team. And when you talk about who makes the last call, who is the guy that's making the last call? I think the reason why nobody is saying it's me or it's him or it's them, I think it's because it's Jonathan Kraft. Maybe Jonathan and Bob Kraft, let's say it that way. But I think ultimately Jonathan Kraft is going to run this football team. And when it comes down to Vrabel and anyone else, I think ultimately they're going to need Jonathan Kraft.
All right, thanks for the call, Jim. Ted, since you were the most intimate in that organization for a while, do you think John Kraft is making the final call as they head toward the draft next week?
No, I do not.
I don't either.
Not on the players.
Nope.
Not on the play. The only time it gets to the ownership level is that first round pick, and usually deciding on if on quarterbacks.
Right.
That's when they get involved in the draft. Other than that, the owners have no impact on who they actually draft.
Right. And I would probably throw in maybe the Milton Williams contract for 100 and whatever million dollars. Maybe that is a little more.
You got to run that by the bosses.
Right. That's a big number
to probably
write.
Greenlit the spending, just the amount of spending that you saw.
But
how it's executed.
Mike Vrabel's running the Patriots. I think we can.
Well, they like their one football guy. They had their one football guy they turned to for their CEO of football for 20-something. You want to talk about business sense.
Ted's right.
Yeah.
The collaboration of the last couple of years has been a colossal failure.
Yeah.
You picked fourth in the draft, right? You won four games and you were picking three or four in the draft. So collaboration failed them miserably. It wouldn't be crazy for them to go, how about we go back to that thing that worked where we just had one guy who was smart and made a lot of good decisions?
Yeah. All they want is, you guys ever see, have you seen this recent series on HBO called The Agency? It's about, you know, CIA, you know, spy craft, that kind of thing. Well, it's the whole world of spy craft is it's just trying to get somebody in the room.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That with a mic or they can get intel or it's so you're always trying to just, you know, develop, you know, your people to get into these rooms that you can get, you know, information from. Oh, it's all craft. That's all Elliot. He's like a spy craft. He's like a little spy for the crafts.
Elliot's wearing the wire.
Yeah. So that's all. He's other than that, he's just there to observe, listen, and then report back to the bosses. That's it. Other than that, he's got really no real job requirement.
Tom Curran and Ted Johnson, not real high on the value of Elliot Wolf within the Patriots organization. Up next, we need to talk about another guy whose value is in question. That would be Jeremy Swayman, but it would also be McAvoy, your would-be captain and your defenseman who was injured. We're going to talk about his comments to the Boston Globe and The Athletic about what went down at Four Nations, how he ended up injured and infected, and the season just going miserably for his team. That's up next here on WEEI Afternoons. But first, Dan Ball.
Optimize your nutrition this year with Factor, America's number one ready-to-eat meal service. Factor's fresh, never-frozen meals are dietitian-approved, ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from 40 weekly options across 8 dietary preferences like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Eat smarter at factormeals.com/listen50 and use code LISTEN50 for 50% off plus free shipping on your first box. Factormeals.com/listen50, code LISTEN50.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
Dollar Shave Club is the real grooming MVP. Their six-blade razor gives you the closest, most comfortable shave. The four-blade features Swift Rinse Tech for longer, thicker hair. And the handle has a no-slip 360-degree diamond pattern grip for comfort and control. Shave butter works great with their razors. It's translucent for precision and delivers a long-lasting glide that hydrates the skin. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun and use code HOMERUN for 20% off your order of $20 or more. Plus free shipping. Whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
You got what's trending.
That was Bruins franchise goaltender Jeremy Swayman. I played in a bunch of games. It was awesome.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah, a lot of people thought was it was awesome, right, Jeremy?
You know who thought it was awesome? Think of where I'm going with this. The opponent.
Ah.
Who you told me earlier, he five games, he gave up six or more goals.
Four shutouts on the season, five games with six or more goals against.
He was the 42nd best goalie in hockey.
How many teams in hockey, Andy?
32.
You know there what? Are 32? There are 32. Seattle and Vegas.
Oh, the Kraken. 32, yeah. Okay, you're right. 32.
Thank you.
So he's only the 10th backup if you had the top 32 as starters.
Top third backup in the NHL.
Jeez, for $8 million.
I've gone back and forth with these comments. I heard it on Christian was playing these, and it is jaw-dropping at first. You know, he kind of takes a little – He says what you don't want to hear him say at first is basically, this was an awesome season. I was healthy, and I want to give credit to the trainers, but I got to hold myself accountable. It wasn't my best year. It's like, how about start with it wasn't my best year first, and then kind of and then do the other thing. But this scares me. I'm not going to lie. Look, athletes, and I go back and forth with Jeremy because he's learning all this for the first time. Like this is all new to him, and so you hear things from athletes. Because they're young and they don't know any better. And this is their first time going through contracts and the pressure and being the guy. But at the same time, you hear what he's saying. And it's like, I get what he's trying. He's trying not to just take all this negativity and then do something bad with it. He's trying to just block it off, and then he's into this bubble that he can just. But bro, you're in New England where people care, they're passionate. You know what? If you fall on your sword and you hold yourself accountable and you're self-critical, you will win fans over more that way than you will doing it the way he seems to be doing it.
Especially a guy, Dan, and you remember this, my battles with Arcand, like his PR went south in the negotiations before he even sucked. Back then, it was just, who does he think he is? What's his value? But in the back of your head, you're like, hey, he was pretty good a year ago. Like, he's a pretty good goalie.
Right.
Now,
good tandem goalie.
Right.
Good tandem goalie.
And maybe still is a good tandem goalie. Right, maybe he needs to go back to be in. And Korpisalo said, I'll play more. I'd be happy to play more. I'll play more.
Also not great.
No, not great at all. But he needs to be aware. And he told us he was a smart guy. He went to UMaine Business School. He told us how smart he was when he was negotiating. And Ted, you're right. Like, this was just a little, using the word awesome, and with a lighthearted nature is not what Boston sports fans, Bruins fans. The only out I give him is, Dan, you can correct me if I'm wrong, goalies are nuts.
Oh, out of their mind.
Like, wasn't the Tim Thomas one, was it Ulmark? Who had the, you got to have the goldfish mind or something? Like this weird comment about mind of a goldfish or something.
Yeah.
Like, they're different.
It was Ulmark. Oh,
Tuca was
different.
Had his thing.
That's the position.
Tim Thomas, you said, had his thing.
So. You're willingly having people shoot little rubber pucks at you 100 miles an hour plus. Right. Like, you got to be a little different.
Is there a difference, though? Does it feel different? I mean, Zadorov had some comments. You know, you had maybe Marchand had some issue. It's okay to be different, but it feels like his teammates don't like his differences. Don't like his nature. Guys have pushed back, but guys have been critical of Jeremy, and so I'm not sure he's fully accepted on that team. Is what I worry about. I'm not saying he's not. I'm just saying that's what I would worry about.
Right.
Is that the players on the team look at him like we're kind of looking at him now.
Well, the difference to me is a guy like Zadorov. He willingly signs here. It seemed like he bought in from day one. He just didn't play very well, and he didn't seem to fit the system that they were trying to put him in. Swayman put this season in jeopardy and made it all about him back when you and Arcand were arguing about his contract. So from jumps before training camp, it became about Jeremy Swayman, about I'm trying to get mine, and I'll play when you tell me that I'm going to play when we sign this contract. And then you turn around and we're the 42nd best goaltender after making it all about you during the preseason. So I don't know if there's anything behind the scenes that you talk to. But if I was a teammate and I realized that this year was maybe my Brad Marchand, I'm at the end of my contract, or I'm looking at this and a guy like Charlie Coyle, I don't know how many great years I have left to win a cup, and this is what my goalie's doing, and then he stinks, I wouldn't love him.
Right. And then you mix in, it's dramatic, but you can say he undercut the season before it even started. Like, if you want to, you can blame him for sort of the snowball that started to go bad.
Or the, the front office for letting it drag out as long
as
it did, too.
Sure, but they have a longer history with them, and some of them have been paid by those guys, maybe, and maybe there's a loyalty to Cam, and Cam's got a certain cachet that might sway them. But, maybe you were a Montgomery guy. Right? Couldn't you have been a Montgomery guy in that dressing room? And you're like, you kind of got him fired.
Yeah.
You were bitching about your contract. You weren't ready. You sucked. And the coach I liked is now going to the Stanley Cup playoffs in St. Louis while we're in a freaking retool.
And you knew that he wasn't in great footing, Montgomery, to start the season. There were the questions, should they have just fired him after last year? And now you're doing this and adding fuel to a fire that shouldn't be there. I just wanted to know in that clip that we played, I want to know you're pissed. Everybody around you is pissed. So I don't want to hear the first word being awesome if you're so smart and went to business school. I want to know you're mad, but maybe you did like how your body responded to the games played total, and you're going to learn from it. But I want to know you're upset about what just happened.
Can you maybe spin it a little bit in a way that because his defense in front of him was not great all year.
No.
So are we going too far? Are we going too far that, and you look at his numbers and go, it was all his fault, because it wasn't. There was some bad defense being played in front of him.
Mason Lauri finished with the worst plus-minus out of any defenseman in hockey this year, and that's just one of the issues that was with you. So there's absolutely
credence to that. You got Lindholm and McAvoy. Those were supposed to be studs. And
they are.
I mean,
how much is he making? $8 million.
That's right.
I pay you to be really good. Like, it can be good or bad in front of you and your but he's 42nd. Are we blaming the 42nd best performance on the defense in front of him? Like, if they were a little bit better,
it's a contributor. It contributes.
Sure.
You have to factor it in.
So he'd be 32 if the defense had been a little bit better.
Okay.
Still, he'd be the worst goalie in the starting realm instead of being a backup.
I heard Stiz pipe in. What do you want to say, Stiz?
Well, I was just going to say, I had this as a three-point stance. Thank you, Dan. Maybe a month ago, that does he deserve some of the blame? Absolutely. Does he deserve all of it? Probably not. And I don't know what you guys want him to do. Like, should he be up there, like, cussing at fans like someone like Durant does? Like, if you don't think Swayman is upset with his season, like, trust me, he's upset.
You know that for sure?
Yes, absolutely.
Did you listen to that? Did you get anything that sensed upset out of that?
I don't know. Like, do you want him to be throwing stuff? Like, I don't know. I don't think you can take.
Yeah.
I don't think you can take that and then come to the conclusion that he's not upset with his performance. He knows how he played.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah, I look at it. Stiz in the. Like the Chris, I always think, you know, Chris Sales could give classes to guys that come in and are potential stars here in Boston, just on how to handle the media. Just tell everybody that it was on you. You got to do better. You're disappointed in yourself. Put it all on yourself, and fans will love you for it. You know, if you deflect, you use excuses, you're dismissive. Then people are gonna look at you kind of cross-eyed.
He said, "I take accountability."
He did, but after...
For the awesome season.
Yeah,
So there's one other...
That awesome season was all on me, guys. Don't worry.
One other aspect of the Bruins' clean-out day. Is that what they called it over there?
Yeah, locker clean-out.
Clean-out day.
Yeah.
They use garbage bags. You guys used to use legit garbage bags. Just like throw it in and walk out.
We get bologna sandwiches too, bud.
Yeah, it was a different time. You're right.
Bologna sandwiches.
So another... You talk about the defense in front of Swayman. Charlie McAvoy is supposed to be a part of that, a big part of that. Makes a lot of money, and we all know what happened at the Four Nations, or we thought we knew what happened. He got the injury, the AC separation, took a shot to play against Canada, got an infection, never played again for the Bruins. And he said, quite honestly, it cost me my season. It cost me a lot. He talked about having a pick line, and he just finished his last round of antibiotics.
Yep.
Feels like this happened forever ago.
Staph infection is no joke.
Yeah. The thing I actually found interesting is we were sort of angry at the time. We were talking about the Minnesota Wild team
Joel
doctor.
Joel Boyd. I Googled it. I knew you were going for it.
And McAvoy said it could have been my Under Armour that was dirty, or my gear, or this or that, or a pillow at the hotel. Could have been anything. That's why there's no ill will with anybody involved. You don't seem to believe him, Ted.
He's covering for trainers or doctors.
Okay.
Or hospitals.
So he talked a lot about the injury. He said, I'm going to talk about it now. It cost me my season. Then I'm going to move on. The thing I actually found interesting at the end of his media session and the end of the story in The Athletic is there's certainly motivation to never be here again. He's talking about the spot they're in as a team that unloaded all these players and, you know, picking in the top five to find ways to improve this culture. There's that C word again we've been hearing down in Foxborough. Now we're hearing it about the Garden and get back to what it looks like. But this isn't a good place to be right now. We will do it. What an opportunity. What an exciting challenge for us to be the people that will get it back to where it needs to be. That's how I'm sitting here. We're all looking at it the same way. It's not going to be easy, but it can be done.
Now that is how you answer a question after you have a terrible season.
That was my point. So Swayman, awesome, this and that. That right there, he's the associate captain, right?
Yeah.
So might be the captain moving forward, something like that?
It seems to be him or Pastrnak. I mean,
after those
Pastrnak
quotes,
and Swayman are your three highest paid players.
I'd vote McAvoy based on what? Swayman does not get consideration if I'm voting for
him. Why? What happened?
He stinks.
Okay.
And he stinks at talking. I would vote for McAvoy after that. That's a captain comment right there.
Yeah, it's a good comment. I just think he's underperformed big time when it comes to what his contract is. So I don't want to give the captaincy to a guy that I think is underperformed and has for the entirety of this new contract.
I agree with you there. Then it goes to Pasta.
Yeah, Pasta, listen to his comments after the season.
Can we blend McAvoy's comments with Pasta's play, and that would be our captain?
There you go. That would be the
ideally. Yeah.
That would be ideal. But Pasta seems to be talking.
Connor McDavid, yeah.
I think Pasta just is getting a little bit. I mean, for him to kind of play the way he did when there was really nothing to play for, it is kind of admirable, and you have to respect that, don't you? And think maybe that's worthy of a captain. I think I heard the midday guy say that there's teams that have gone without captains before.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
it's not just a foregone conclusion that you have to pick a captain,
but it's a bad look if you don't. To me, it sends like a message.
Well, to right.
We don't have a leader. We're struggling. We're finding our way. Because they say they're retooling, not rebuilding. Well, if you're only retooling, I feel like you should have a captain, especially when you have a bunch of players making $7, 8, 9 million a year.
What happened the last time that you named a captain just to kind of name the next man up captain? Brad Marchand. This is where we are now. So I'm not in any rush necessarily.
Okay, so you'd be okay with no captain next year?
Yeah. Unless somebody earns it and deserves it and shows that they're willing to do all the different cliches that I'm just about to list off.
I think that's a nice. I think that'd be a carrot to just dangle out there to the McAvoys and to the Pasternak's of the world
and
the Swayman's.
Prove it.
Go get it.
Maybe legit. Hang it in the dressing room. Yeah. The C just dangling from the ceiling. That. No one gets it on your shirt. It's dangling up there. When one of you've earned it, it's like a ladder match in WWE. Yeah. You got to climb the ladder to get the box of money or the belt.
Don't set the precedent that it's the next man up or the highest paid player. Earn it. You deserve it. See where guys gravitate to. You're going to have a bunch of rookies, younger players, players from other teams, and you've just kind of brought in hired guns, veterans, and leaders in years past. So I'm all about letting these guys earn it.
Who ultimately decides that? I mean, that's a Cam Neely, Don Sweeney decision, right?
I would assume.
Yeah, I would think so, especially that you're hiring a first or a new head coach.
I mean, that's a hard move for those guys. I mean, for them to not name a captain, that would be something. I can't imagine them doing that.
Yeah, I'm going to guess that they end up.
Doesn't feel like that's their nature.
No, I think it's going to be Pasta. That would be my guess. But I like your idea. Make somebody earn it. We're not going to slap it on somebody if you don't actually deserve it. Up next here on WEEI Afternoons, Ted Johnson has his TED Talks. So we decided I need a little more spotlight.
Now
we're getting a little heart-to-heart. It's Boston Marathon weekend, Marathon Monday. On Monday, we'll have the early start here at Fenway. I ran the Boston Marathon twice.
Oh my!
We're going to touch on that next here on WEEI Afternoons.
So happy with the way my body felt.
Hey, everyone. Summer is just around the corner, and May's packed with reasons to celebrate. Whether you're firing up the grill for a backyard barbecue, soaking up the sun by the pool, or enjoying a long weekend with friends and family, Whole Foods Market makes it easy to kick off the season with great everyday prices on high-quality favorites, from fresh produce to grilling essentials. Let's dive into the savings and get your summer fun started right. Personally, I love how easy Whole Foods Market makes it to pull together a last-minute gathering. I was there recently picking up a few things for a cookout, and those yellow low-price signs are no joke. I grabbed their No Antibiotics Ever Ground Turkey and a few 365 by Whole Foods Market Organic Salad Kits. Honestly, so convenient and surprisingly affordable. The quality is still everything you'd expect, but I definitely felt like I was scoring a deal, which I love. Plus those yellow sale signs, I make a beeline for them now. Especially when I saw strawberries on sale, we went through 2 cartons in one day. Save on May celebrations with great everyday prices at Whole Foods Market.
Can't get enough baseball? Start streaming MLB Network today. Get up to 15 out-of-market games a week live on any device, plus 24/7 access to MLB Network's award-winning shows, including live game look-ins and exclusive player interviews. And hear live radio play-by-play from all 30 clubs with MLB at Bat. Enjoy the home of baseball from virtually anywhere. Plans start as low as $5.99 per month. Sign up now at MLBNetwork.com/stream. Available in the U.S. only. Blackout restriction applies. Visit MLB.com/subscribe for full terms and conditions.
I'm Emma Greed, and I'm the host of the Aspire podcast, a show where I talk to the world's most brilliant minds about building the life of your dreams. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Monday
morning, there will be two massive sporting events in the city of Boston.
Yeah.
Red Sox will play. 11:05 start, I believe.
11:10.
11:10, first pitch.
Walk of Beulah.
Patriot Day and Marathon Monday,
great
tradition.
Day.
Absolutely. And this is where, Teddy, you and I had a little disagreement about the Masters and maybe was it rated, overrated.
Yeah.
And this, the Boston Marathon, I think is an event I like. Wise thought was a little overrated when I was growing up. I heard a lot of, I'm a Massachusetts kid, but I had never been to the marathon, but I had heard it's great, it's awesome, marathon day, all the things.
Again, Downey's something you've never been to.
Yeah, a little bit, a little bit. And then I ran it.
Hard way.
Then I ran it, and it is one of the coolest events I've ever witnessed, taken part in, seen. It is not overrated. I believe it's actually underrated. Because the amount of support and energy that comes, forget the runners, from the fans, the sidelines. And you think about this, 26 freaking miles, and the bulk of it, there are people. There are people with signs, with bananas and oranges and cookies and yelling and cheering and kissing and belling. And it is an unbelievable event that I would recommend to anybody. And the beauty of the Boston Marathon. So Dan, put the numbers in here, the cutoff time to qualify, 6:51.
Yeah.
I did not run that.
Ah.
I ran for charity and raised money. And a lot of people do that now. It's a very popular, like Teddy Bruschi has a team. There's a lot of different teams, ex-athletes, yeah. Patriots have a team, Red Sox have a team raising funds for the marathon. But I would, anybody that's ever said, should I do it? Would that be something I could do? A, you can do it. And B, you should do it because it's the greatest thing in the world. I'm being serious.
Wow.
I don't know. You guys are like stunned.
Well, no, I guess.
Positivity from you is still a little new to all of us. Sorry.
Did you at any time during the race, did you ever experience the runner's high that they talk about? Or was it just pain the entire way?
The high was earlier. The pain was later.
Okay.
And the second time I ran it, actually. So I ran it 2013, the bombing year. Didn't get to finish, was like a mile from the finish line.
Wait, really?
So I had to run it again.
Yeah.
I was gypped out of my, I wanted my photo. I wanted the, finish.
Point
of doing it if I'm not going to finish. So felt like I had to do it again. And for other reasons, to my kids were at the finish line. And I thought we needed as a family to sort of get past it, do it again, get back on the horse kind of mentality.
Wow. Okay.
But I felt so much better the first year. And then the second year, it was like mile 10 or something. I forget. And I was like, oh my God.
Someone jumped on your back?
So I thought I was going to pass out.
Did you? Isn't they say the key to the marathon is the caloric intake. Like you got to make sure you have, if you start the race on an empty stomach, you're screwed.
And I think what I did the second time is I wasn't properly nourished.
You bonk.
Because I have IBS and I was like worried about the opposite issue and like I'm trying to balance everything.
Intake versus output.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then at the 10 mile, because you see people running off into the woods along the way or like looking for places. Oh, yeah.
Running
people got to go. They got to go. Like, there's porta potties, but there's also in between there might not be.
Yeah. Yeah. What's the craziest thing you saw while you were on the race? Running anything?
Definitely that. People going to the bathroom where they need to go to the bathroom.
Getting off.
My favorite sign of all time, and you need these because like you said, you start to get like, I've been running for 3.5 hours. Like this is a long freaking time.
Got to change it up.
These signs, some version of, if it was supposed to be easy, it'd be called your mom. So keep running.
Okay. So, that gets you going.
Oh my God. Oh, that's a hop in your step a quarter mile, half mile, like all of that. But no, the food, the time I almost thought I was going to pass out. That's when I started doing, I took everything. If there was a person with an arm out, banana, orange, chocolate chip,
it could have
cookies,
been laced. Ooh,
anything. I didn't care.
Yeah.
And it worked. Like a mile later, I was like, I'm back, baby.
Really?
Which was good because I had more than half a marathon to run still.
Do you guys remember one of the more incredible things I've ever seen? And when I watched the Boston Marathon, I got drafted here in 95, and I watched the marathon that year. I couldn't believe this feat that this person did is they ran the marathon. They called himself Backwards Man. He ran the entire marathon backwards.
Good Lord.
And the dude was V'd up, jacked up, kind of a muscle. And he raised a crap ton of money. What he did is he ran the first couple miles forward because it was so condensed. That he can't run backwards. But he ran like the other 24 miles backwards.
That's not.
Can you
that's
imagine running a marathon backwards?
That's I can't imagine insane. Running it forward.
But you also see.
I would never in a million years do a marathon.
Really? I was going to ask you. Why not?
It's my body's not built for that.
You could.
I could do it. I just brag. I mean, anybody can do it.
No, I agree.
It just depends what time. You know, under what time? My time would not be very good. It's just. It's just I don't, the running. I don't get it. I don't know. It's
really?
Not my thing. Yeah.
See, I think it's a little bit like the Masters.
No,
I think if you decided for whatever reason, raise money, somebody asked you to, your girlfriend asked you, run it with me, whatever. If you got a reason, I think you'd do it. And then when you finished would say, wow, that was one of the coolest things I've ever done.
Yeah, maybe.
Like the Masters. You went to the Masters with your dad. You've seen the course. Like you have that experience. I think you would look back on it because that's what I tell everyone. It's going to suck. Because you got to start training in like November and December. It's cold all winter. You're not running it until April. It's a long way. Like, but when you're done, you're like, I ran the Boston Marathon. Like this medal says I ran the this picture says I ran the Boston Marathon. And it's kind of the granddaddy of them all. It's
right.
Bragging rights marathon. Screw Chicago, New York, London. And no, Boston
Boston's where it's at. Heartbreak Hill, the downhills, the uphills, the whole thing.
I'm trying to think, you're running, I bet your running gait is like Byers. Keith Byers, you know, like
yeah.
Little short little strides.
A little bit.
A little bit.
Well, I also had the theory.
Like shuffle steps.
So some people do different theories. Like some people will walk like the water stations to rest or do like, I was like, if I stop, I don't know if I'll get the engine back going again. It'll slow down, but I'm not stopping. I'm not walking. I'm not doing anything. So that was one of my theories, but it's a really.
Would you do it again?
I've actually been thinking about it.
Really?
Yeah.
You did say you're keeping yourself in 5K shape at very
5K to 10K shape.
Yeah.
Oh, very well. Yeah. The biggest challenge, honestly, isn't the physical running. It's having the time to do the running 4 or 5 days a week to train in December and January, and it snows. And are you going to go run in the snow? Or
you can't shortchange yourself on the training.
No, you'll get hurt or you won't be able to finish. No, absolutely. And that's the key. And it's like having a second job. It's like, well, I go to work later, so I guess I'm getting up at 5:30 this morning and running 3 to 5 to 10 to 15 miles every day. And it's just, but Dan Ball, you should put it on your bucket list.
Okay.
Maybe next year you'll be the, since he kind of poo-pooed it and said no.
I'm not poo-pooing it. I'm poo-pooing running in it. I'll go and watch and enjoy it with all the spectators.
If Dan runs it, then we can go to it, baby, and we'll have somebody to cheer on, to look for in the thousands and thousands of people.
I would support Dan any way I could if he was to run it. Yep.
I'll just be wearing the WEEI Afternoons logo on my shirt. Hi, everyone.
You heard that, though, Dan. If you run it, you'll run it for a charity, and you'll need to raise a lot of money. And he just said he'll support you any way he can.
Absolutely.
So the Ted Johnson machine is a powerful one.
He put $10,000 towards your fundraising right there. I heard it on the radio on WEEI.
I'll get started. I'll run back to the studio.
But yeah, that's Monday. A great day in Boston sports, obviously, with the Red Sox playing early. Tradition that's pretty darn unique and was originated so people could actually leave the game and go down and watch the runners finishing. The schedule's a little different now, so it doesn't totally work out that way. But there'll be, you had, what is it, 36,000 runners or 24,000 runners accepted.
Yeah, they turned down, at least since 2012, this was as far back as I could find, they turned down over 12,000 applicants this year, which is nuts.
But 24,000 people will get the experience of a lifetime Monday. Up next here on WEEI Afternoons, we need to talk about the Boston Celtics because the Boston Celtics are embarking on their own little marathon here.